Hi, my name is Kelly Tsai. I'm a professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy. Welcome to this month's Great Ideas. Kelly, you have a book that is very, very topical at this moment. Tell me about that.
Well, the book title is Capitalism Without Democracy, The Private Sector in Contemporary China. And it was basically motivated by my finding that China's private sector is just growing explosively. It now generates over two-thirds of industrial output. It went from being virtually non-existent in the late 1970s to now having over 200 million employees and just really being the fastest growing part of the Chinese economy. So a lot of people are wondering, well, what are the political implications of this? People who are inspired by modernization theory think that as a country develops a capitalist class, that then capitalists will demand democracy in the spirit of no taxation without representation. And my finding is that that is not the case at all.
So this isn't just a gestalt opinion that you've generated by your study of China. You actually did a formal study.
Right. I conducted a formal national survey of private entrepreneurs in 10 different provinces. And then that was also supplemented by field work in 10 provinces as well, where I interviewed private entrepreneurs, local officials, academics, journalists to get a more holistic sense of what was going on.
And you're saying that two-thirds of this huge engine that's China's economy right now is generated by these folks.
Exactly, yes.
I find that a remarkable number. How does that compare with what's happened in the past?
Well, before the 1970s, the government didn't even keep official statistics about China's private sector because they were illegal. It wasn't permitted to operate a private enterprise or pursue profit or even think about pursuing private profit during the Mao era. But once Mao Zedong died in 1976 and reforms started in the late 1970s, slowly but surely, it started out with micro-entrepreneurs, started running businesses, and they ended up coming with pretty creative ways to grow their businesses, even though they faced a lot of formal constraints.
Can you give me any specific examples of those creative ways?
Sure. My book talks about a whole host of what I call adaptive informal institutions. And adaptive informal institutions are basically creative grassroots responses to the constraints and also the opportunities of the formal institutional and regulatory environment. So an example of this would be before 1988, technically it was illegal to have a private business that employed more than 8 employees because according to Marxist Das Kapital, any business that had more than 8 employees would be considered an exploitative household producing unit. But anything with less than 8 employees was considered fine. So if a business wanted to run a larger operation and hire more than 8 employees, what they did was register as a collective enterprise. And this strategy was known as wearing a red hat because calling oneself a collective enterprise sounds much more communist and ideologically palatable than just violating the rules outright. So basically what happened were these red hat enterprises proliferated to the point that by the time businesses were actually allowed to employ more than 8 employees in 1988, there were already 500,000 of these in China. And this strategy, this adaptive strategy of wearing a red hat basically became institutionalized. It became part of everyday discourse. And then reformers in Beijing were able to capture this local innovation and use it to justify then legalizing private enterprise.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like there's adaptation going on both sides of the equation.
Absolutely. Grassroots entrepreneurs are exploiting loopholes and coming up with all sorts of creative financing strategies, registration strategies, investment strategies. And then the central government is learning about these strategies because they become too widespread to ignore. And then in turn, they can say, wait, this is working at the grassroots level. So let's go ahead and try to make it legitimate.
Right. So this is actually a really important and, I think, brilliant strategy on the part of the government.
Well, I'm not sure that the central government ever thought about it consciously that it would be responding to grassroots innovations. The central government has had, to be fair, has had an experimental attitude towards the course of economic reform, but there was never any overarching strategy or master plan. It was just trying to be receptive to what would happen at the grassroots level. And then this was complicated by the fact that there's always been elite disagreement over the course of China's future because there's still officials that feel like China should not be developing a very strong market economy who still believe that communist ideology, in the original sense of the word, should remain the pillar of Chinese society.
Yeah, that particular cohort is decreasing all the time.
That's absolutely true, yes.
They're aging out of the system, really, and they're being replaced by all these folks who have enormous energy and have a different vision.
Yes, that's true, absolutely. But there's still certain parts of the Chinese economy that are dependent on the old command economy plan, such as state-owned enterprises that employ tens of thousands of employees. And so even though local officials in areas that have a lot of state-owned enterprises would like to see more private sector development, would very much like to welcome foreign investment, they're constrained by the fact that they have these large state-owned enterprises. And if they privatize and lay off the workers, they're going to have a serious problem on their hands.
So let's just segue from this back into this issue of democracy versus capitalism, if you will. Is it an inextricable link? Do these two things necessarily have to go together? And it sounds like we have a stellar example of a place where they don't have to.
I think you're absolutely right. China is the world's largest country, and it's a stunning example of how introduction of market forces is not leading to demands for democracy either by economic actors or by political elites.
Tell me your own personal thoughts about that. Do you believe that there's a necessary transition, if you will, from a market-based economy, a capitalistic economy, to democracy? Are those necessarily principles that must be employed?
Not at all. That basic association of capitalist development and democracy is based on a handful of countries in the West centuries ago, basically. And so even though now there may be many countries where capitalism and democracy are correlated, it doesn't mean that capitalism causes democracy. As a country's economy grows, a number of structural changes can occur. One is that there may be more people involved in the private sector, but private sector capitalists, if their needs are being attended to, if they feel that political stability is best preserved by the current political system rather than a more liberal one, then there's no reason for them to demand democracy.
I'm wondering how forces such as the current world focus on China and on poor manufacturing standards might shift this a little bit.
Well, the central government is very much aware of the need to increase regulatory supervision of industry, of services, of everything. And so the response has been, rather than to increase transparency or liberalizing the political system would facilitate that, the reaction has been the opposite, to actually strengthen state institutions.
I just wonder, how flexible is the state? Is it really going to be able to say, okay, we need to impose checks and balances, but on the other hand, we still want this economy to flourish?
What I anticipate happening is at the local level, there are entire localities that produce just one product. Like, there'll be an entire township that just produces sneakers, and every household factory produces a different part of that sneaker, like shoelaces or the soles, etc. And what'll happen is that these localities will come together, including the local government, to ensure that they're producing better products so their local reputation isn't then affected. I don't think it necessarily requires the central government to liberalize.
Why do people need to know about this? Why do all of us need to be concerned about the economy in China and the forces that are at work there?
First of all, it is the world's largest country. It is very heavily dependent on exports as well. And so people are, without even thinking about it, they're contributing to the Chinese economy. Their lives are entwined with the Chinese economy. And from a political standpoint, there's a lot of curiosity about what's going to happen there, what's actually going on in there, and how are people getting by. And the stories that I'm telling in the book are showing that everyday entrepreneurs are finding a way to get their needs met through very indirect ways, though. They're participating in politics through indirect channels. They're having a structural effect on politics, not through organized collective action or lobbying. They never demanded, for example, to be admitted to the Chinese Communist Party. They never demanded that the Constitution of the People's Republic of China be amended to protect private property rights. Instead, it's a much more indirect process. And so people from the outside who are expecting that organized interest groups will somehow develop or that an alternative political party will form to contest the Communist Party's monopoly on political power are looking in the wrong places for the sources of change. There is the possibility for change within the Chinese system. it has changed very, very dramatically. I mean, just the fact that now private enterprise is permitted, that private property rights are at least protected constitutionally, demonstrate how dramatic these changes are. So my book is saying we need to look at actual practices at the ground level and then also look how the central government is reacting to them and responding to them, or not responding, as the case may be.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here. I really appreciate it.